Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we are zooming on a topic that, well, it usually makes people want to run for the hills.
Compliance.
Compliance. Specifically, we're looking at the healthcare landscape right here in Orange County, California. And before you tune out thinking this is just, you know, paperwork or administrative boredom, let me stop you.
Yeah, please don't tune out. This is actually about survival.
Exactly. Because if you are running a practice, or even if you're just a patient in the OC, the rules of engagement have completely changed for 2026.
They really have.
We're working off a new guide from Technegian. They're an IT and compliance firm out of Irvine. And it's titled The Orange County 2026 High Pay Compliance Guide and Checklist.
And it is a beast of a document, let me tell you.
It is. But what struck me right away wasn't the length. It was the urgency. This isn't some best practices brochure.
No.
It reads more like a survival guide for a whole new era of enforcement. It feels like the stakes have just been raised significantly.
That's the perfect way to frame it. For, I mean, the last 10 years or so, there's this unspoken rule in healthcare, especially for smaller practices, you know, dentists in Costa Mesa or physical therapists in Huntington Beach, that you could sort of
fly under the radar.
Yeah, fly under the radar.
Right.
You know the drill. Yeah. You lock the file cabinet at night. You throw a laminated poster up in the break room about privacy.
Yeah.
And you just mark yourself as compliant.
Exactly. And what Technegian is flagging here is that the radar has been upgraded. The Office for Civil Rights, the OCR, they've cleared their backlog of old complaints.
Okay.
They are not just looking for the big hospital networks anymore. The guide explicitly mentions that smaller providers are now viewed as productive enforcement targets.
Productive enforcement targets. Wow. That is a chilling phrase. It sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie.
It is. It's regulator speak for low-hanging fruit. Small practices often have less mature security programs, so they're easier to audit, easier to catch in a violation, and easier to find. So if your whole strategy has been, I'm too small to matter,
you're actually painting a target on your back.
So let's get into the mechanics of this shift. I mean, the guide talks a lot about how the actual rules are being interpreted differently now. There's this one word that seems to cause more trouble than anything else in the HIPAA vocabulary.
Oh, I know where you're going with this. Addressable.
Yes, addressable.
Ah, the addressable trap.
Yeah.
This is maybe the single biggest source of confusion in HIPAA history.
Okay, break that down for us. Because in plain English, addressable just sounds like optional.
Right.
It sounds like, hey, if you get around to it, that'd be great, but no pressure.
And that is exactly how thousands of practice managers interpreted it for years. The security rule would say something like, encryption is addressable, and they'd go,
great, we choose not to address it.
Because it's expensive or it's complicated. Yeah.
But that doesn't fly in 2026.
Not even close. Addressable never actually meant optional. It meant flexible.
Flexible how?
It meant you could either implement the standard or you could implement an alternative that's just as effective, provided, and this is the key part, you document why the standard wasn't reasonable for you.
Okay. So you have to show your work. You can't just ignore it.
Precisely. But here is the reality check from the Technegian source. In 2026, technology has become so cheap and ubiquitous that the whole it's too hard excuse is dead.
Right.
Take multi-factor authentication, MFA.
The code you get on your phone when you log in.
Right. 5 or 6 years ago, maybe you could argue that setting up MFA for a small clinic with old software was, you know, technically burdensome.
Sure.
Today, it's standard. It's built into everything. If you aren't using MFA or encryption now, you just can't justify it. You're essentially admitting to negligence. The label is still there, but functionally it's mandatory.
So the flexibility has basically evaporated because the technology caught up. That makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Let's pivot to the privacy rule. I think most people kind of separate this into privacy, which is paperwork, and security, which is the hackers.
Yeah. But the guide argues they're much more intertwined.
Oh, they are. Privacy is the what and who. Security is the how. You really can't have one without the other.
And the what starts with that document we all sign and immediately ignore. The Notice of Privacy Practices.
The NPP.
Yeah.
Yeah, the guide points out a detail that's honestly kind of funny.
Yeah.
If it weren't so dangerous.
Okay.
They did an audit of practices in Orange County and found a huge percentage are displaying NPPs that were written in like 2005 or 2013.
I've definitely seen those. They look like they were typed on a typewriter and photocopied about 100 times.
Right. And here's the problem. The law requires that document to reflect your current operations.
Mm.
So if your 2010 notice says, "We do not share data electronically," but you switch to a cloud-based EHR system in 2020, well, you're technically lying to every single patient who walks in the door.
And that's a persistent violation every single day.
Every single patient. And that opens the door to the minimum necessary standard. This is another one of those concepts that feels kind of squishy, but is actually very rigid in the eyes of an auditor.
This is the curiosity killed the compliance strategy rule, right?
Basically, it just means that staff should only access the data that is absolutely necessary for their specific job.
Okay.
The guy gives a great example, a billing coordinator. They need to see diagnostic codes, insurance info. They do not need to read the clinical notes about a patient's marriage counseling session.
But in a lot of small offices, everyone just shares the admin login, right? Or the permissions aren't set up correctly.
Exactly.
So the receptionist can see everything the doctor can see.
Which is a violation. If you have a receptionist who can see lab results, they don't need to schedule an appointment. You have failed the minimum necessary standard.
Mm.
It's not about whether they do look. It's about whether they can. It's about the architecture of access.
That is a crucial distinction. It's about the potential, not just the action. Okay, moving into the heavy-hitting section, the security rule. Technigian breaks this down into administrative, physical, and technical safeguards. Let's start with administrative, because the guide calls out the risk analysis as the number one failure point.
Without a doubt. And we need to be very, very clear about what a risk analysis is, because most people get it wrong. They confuse it with a basic checklist.
Right. Do we have locks? Yes. Do we have passwords? Yes. Okay, we're good.
That is a compliance check. A risk analysis is a comprehensive audit of where your electronic protected health information, your EPHI, actually lives.
An inventory.
An inventory, exactly. Is it on the server? Is it on the receptionist's laptop? Is it on a backup drive the doctor takes home? Is it on the copier's hard drive?
And then, I assume, identifying what could go wrong with it.
Exactly. You have to map the threats to the data location. The backup drive is in the doctor's car. What is the risk? Theft. Likelihood. Medium. Impact. High. You have to do that math for every single place you have data.
And this can't be a one-and-done document from one you opened 10 years ago.
No. And that's where people get fined. If you buy a new server, switch your EHR, move offices, that old analysis is basically trash. It has to be a living document.
Right.
The guide emphasizes that if an auditor asks for your risk analysis and you hand them a document dated 3 years ago, the audit is, it's over. You've lost.
And connected to this is the risk management plan. So you found all the risks. Now what?
No, you fix them. But, and this is important, you don't have to fix everything overnight. The law understands budgets.
Okay.
But you need a plan. You need a document that says, we identify this risk, we will fix it by this date, and here is the person responsible for it.
So perfect security isn't the requirement. Managed security is.
That's it, exactly. If you have a plan and you're working the plan, regulators are often lenient. If you have no plan and you're just ignoring the risk, they throw the book at you.
Let's talk about the human element here, training. The guide has a very cynical but probably accurate take on this. It says, the training happened. Nobody wrote it down.
The classic compliance fallacy. You can have a brilliant lunch and learn where you teach everyone about phishing and ransomware and password hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have a sign-in sheet with the date, the topic, and signatures, in the eyes of the OCR, that training never happened.
Documentation just seems to be the recurring nightmare in all of this.
It is the golden rule.
Oh.
If it isn't written down, it didn't happen. You have to be able to prove your diligence.
There was one administrative red flag that really stood out to me, offboarding. The zombie employee.
Ah, yes.
It sounds like a horror movie plot, but it's really just bad HR.
But it's a huge technical vulnerability. The rule is simple. When an employee leaves, whether they quit or are fired, their access has to be terminated immediately.
And what does immediately mean? End of the week. When IT gets around to it.
The guide is very strict on this. It means that day, before they walk out in the building.
Wow.
If a regulator looks at your logs and sees that Nurse Jane left the practice in March, but her account was used to log in during April.
That's a disaster. Even if it was just her checking a pay stub or something harmless.
It doesn't matter. It shows you have no control over your environment. It shows your walls have holes. And what if that employee was disgruntled? They could delete databases, steal patient lists. The liability is massive.
Let's shift to the physical safeguards. I feel like in 2026, we're so focused on, you know, hackers in Russia and ransomware that we forget about actual doors and windows.
It's the James Bond versus the janitor problem. We worry about these sophisticated cyber attacks, but we leave the server room unlocked.
The guide mentions screen positioning. That feels incredibly low-tech.
It's low-tech, but it's high-risk. If I'm standing at the front desk waiting to check in, and I can read the screen of the person working there.
And you see the name and condition of the patient they are currently scheduling.
That's a breach right there.
Yeah.
You literally just have to turn the monitor or put a little privacy filter on it. It's that simple.
And then there's the disposal issue, the donating computer strap. Mm-hmm.
This one just breaks my heart because people think they're doing a good deed. A practice upgrades its computers and donates the old ones to a local school or a charity.
Here, kids, have some technology.
Here, kids, have 5,000 patient records.
Because they didn't wipe the drives properly.
Right. Dragging files to the recycling bin or even a basic format often isn't enough to stop a determined data recovery tool. The guide insists on professional destruction or, you know, military-grade wiping.
So if you hand over a computer that still has recoverable patient data, you are liable for wherever that data ends up.
100%.
Okay, that feeds into the technical safeguards. This is Technician's bread and butter. We touched on MFA, but let's talk about unique logins.
Oh, this is non-negotiable.
Yeah.
You cannot have a shared front desk account.
Even if the staff all trust each other. Even if it's just easier because Mrs. Higgins always forgets her password.
Trust and convenience are completely irrelevant. Auditability is everything.
Mm.
If a record is deleted or altered or exported at 2 p.m., you need to know exactly which human being did it. If three people share the password, you have no accountability. You can't prove who did what.
And encryption. The guide distinguishes between at rest and in transit.
Yeah, this is important. At rest means the data just sitting on your hard drive. If a laptop is stolen out of a car, which happens all the time in OC, at a beach parking lot or a mall,
sure.
And the drive is encrypted, it is usually not considered a reportable breach. The data is safe. It's just gibberish without the key.
But if it's unencrypted,
you have to notify every single patient whose data was on that drive.
That is a massive difference in consequences. One is a hardware replacement cost. The other is a PR nightmare.
Massive.
Yeah.
And in transit refers to things like email and texting. You can't just email patient records from your Gmail to a specialist. It has to be through an encrypted portal or service.
This brings us to the modern era. Remote work, telehealth. The world changed and healthcare changed with it. But the guide suggests our compliance didn't quite keep up.
We have a telehealth gap. A lot of providers are just using consumer-grade video tools.
Like the ones you use to FaceTime your grandma.
Exactly. And while those might be encrypted, they often lack the Business Associate Agreement, the BAA.
Okay, we need to stop on the BAA. The guide calls this the hidden risk. What is a Business Associate Agreement?
It's a legal contract.
Yeah.
It basically says, hey, vendor, you are now liable for this data, too. HIPAA requires you to have this with anyone who touches your patient data.
Not just the billing company.
No. Your IT support firm.
Yeah.
Your document shredding company. Your cloud storage provider. And yes, your video conferencing tool. If you're using a free version of some video app, you almost certainly do not have a BAA.
Which means you are technically non-compliant every single time you turn that camera on.
Every single time.
And there's a layer deeper here. The guide calls it the subcontractor trap.
This is where it gets really tricky. Let's say you hire a billing company. You sign a BAA with them, you're good.
Theoretically. You did your part.
But what if they hire a freelancer to process some of the data? Or what if they use a cloud server to store it? The chain of custody has to be unbroken. The guide suggests you need to audit your vendors to make sure they are BAA compliant with their subcontractors.
That feels like a rabbit hole.
It is. But remember the productive enforcement target. If the OCR investigates a breach at your billing company, they are going to follow that data right back to you. And they will ask, did you verify that your vendor was compliant?
Let's talk about the Starbucks scenario. Staff working remotely.
The nightmare scenario.
So can staff just hop on the free Wi-Fi at the coffee shop to check charts while they're waiting for their latte?
Absolutely not. Public Wi-Fi is inherently insecure. Anyone with a little flipper zero or a basic sniffer can capture that traffic. You need a VPN, a virtual private network that creates an encrypted tunnel.
Right.
But it's not just the digital connection, it's the physical environment.
The home office hygiene.
Right. If you're a therapist doing a session from your living room, is your spouse in the kitchen? Can they hear the patient? Is Alexa or Google Home listening?
Wait, the smart speakers.
Siri's compliance guides are now flagging smart speakers as a risk. They are always on listening devices.
Huh.
Having one on your desk while you're discussing sensitive patient information is a potential privacy violation.
That is wild, but it makes perfect sense. The walls literally have ears.
They do.
Okay, let's talk about the worst case scenario. A breach happens. You get hacked, or someone loses a laptop. What does the guide say to do first?
First rule, preservation of evidence.
Yeah.
Do not delete anything.
Even though the instinct is to clean it up, to hide the body, so to speak.
Which destroys the forensic trail. If you reformat the drive, investigators can't figure out what was taken. Disconnect the machine from the network, sure. Pull the Ethernet cable,
yeah.
But don't wipe it. You need to know what they took to know who you have to notify.
And the clock starts ticking immediately.
Immediately. The notification deadlines are strict. If the breach affects 500 or more people, you have to notify HHS and the media right away. No delays.
And if it's smaller?
You log it and report it annually. But, and this is critical, you still have to notify the patients within 60 days. You cannot hide it from the people who are affected.
Now we have to add the California layer. Because we are in Orange County, and California never likes to make things simple.
No, California likes to lead. We have the CMIA, the Confidentiality of Medical Information Act, and the CCPA.
And how does that interact with the federal HIPAA laws?
Think of HIPAA as the floor, not the ceiling. If a California law offers more protection to the patient, then the state law wins.
So you can be HIPAA compliant, but still get sued under California state law.
Exactly. Technigian really emphasizes that you can't just use some generic U.S. compliance template you found on the internet. You have to account for the California specifics.
This feels like a mountain of requirements. It's clearly not a DIY project.
It really isn't. I mean, that's why firms like Technigian exist. They handle the technical stuff, the MFA, the encryption, the forensic logging.
Right.
But just as importantly, they handle the documentation.
The paper trail.
The defense strategy. Because that's what this is. When the auditor comes, you are building a defense. You are proving you did your due diligence.
As we wrap up this deep dive, is there one final insight from the source material that you think really sums up the modern challenge?
Yes. It's what I call the cloud misunderstanding. We touched on it, but I want to drive it home.
Go for it.
A lot of people, they sign up for a HIPAA-compliant cloud service, let's say a patient portal or some storage drive, and they see that badge on the website.
Hmm.
And they think the product makes them compliant.
I bought the safe, so I'm safe.
Right. But in the cloud world, there's something called the shared responsibility model. The vendor guarantees the security of the cloud, the physical servers, the network, the data centers, but you're responsible for security in the cloud. Meaning, if you leave the permissions open to public, or if you give every intern admin access, or if you use a weak password like password 123, that is on you. The vendor gave you a secure vault, but you left the door wide open.
That is a powerful distinction. The tool doesn't absolve you of the responsibility.
Never. The regulator won't blame the software. They're going to blame the configuration.
Mm-hmm.
And the configuration is your job.
A sobering thought to end on. Check your digital locks, people. Don't just assume the manufacturer locked them for you.
Absolutely. Trust, but verify.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into the gritty reality of HIPAA in 2026. A big thanks to the Technigian Guide for the wake-up call.
Mm.
We hope this was helpful. Maybe a little scary, but hopefully in a get-your-act-together kind of way.
Better to be woken up by a podcast than a subpoena.
Too true. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you on the next one.